Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Philosopher's Stone podcast. It's me, Jordan, and you're the other guy, Sam.
Yeah.
What up, dude? I gotta apologize in advance. I think my brain is literally just not working today. I've just been struggling to speak all day. So I'm hoping this podcast can shake the cobwebs out before the show tonight. Big show tonight. But yeah, I feel woefully unprepared for tonight, and I feel like I'm not feeling it.
Did you eat any food today? Did you remember to eat?
I ate a breakfast open face sandwich on homemade bread. Let's see, it was homemade bread, open face with ham and turkey. I sizzle up the ham and the turkey in the pan first, and then some cheese and a fried egg on top.
Oh, you got nothing but time, eh? Nothing but time.
Yeah. But it was good. It was a good breakfast. I'll eat again before I go, but man, I've just been like struggling.
Oh, so that's the only thing you've eaten all day, and you're complaining about lack of energy. All right, I get it.
These were massive. I think I figured out the problem. I think if you saw the portion size, you would be understanding that that's not the case. These were huge. It's homemade bread. The bread slices were way bigger than normal slices.
Oh, big slices. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Home slice. Yeah.
It was a big meal to eat like in one day. Like it's not, the day's not even over yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what have you eaten today?
Oatmeal with walnuts.
Okay, and, that's barely food.
Yogurt, fried steak with boiled potato and carrots. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, maybe you're right. I don't know. I don't have the mental capacity to even just debate this.
You're running on fumes.
I am running on fumes.
But that's okay. This podcast will tantalize your brain and distract you from your belly.
I don't feel hungry. That's the thing.
That's because you're too weak to even make the hunger hormones.
Yeah. My body's too weak to signal that I'm hungry to me.
I think so. I genuinely think so. I think you're practically dead on your feet right now.
Well, I look awfully fat for being someone who's almost starving to death.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, you should probably be able to coast for a bit.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah.
You can survive on your body fat if you get vitamins and fluids.
Well, do you ever watch the show Alone? Maybe some of our listeners who did not email us at all.
Yes, I have watched that show, but they don't get any nutrients. That's the problem.
Some of them do, but a lot of them, they put on as much weight as possible before they go out there for that exact reason.
By now they've realized that's how you win the show, is just by being fat and waiting.
Well, see, that's the thing. I'm watching the latest season, and I think it got a reputation. People started calling it a starving competition because they would drop them in places with like no food or very scarce food.
Like Vancouver Island? Are you kidding?
Yeah. So this season they're doing in northern Saskatchewan, and it's like everyone's getting grouse, and there's fish, and there's bear and moose. Like there's plenty of food. So this one,
okay,
I think,
wow,
they purposely were like, they must have taken the feedback to heart and been like, all right, let's put them somewhere where there's lots of food and see who can really like stick it out the longest when they're, you know. Of course, every time in that show when winter hits, food goes way down, so...
Yeah.
This one, the one contestant, first episode, he shoots a grouse with an arrow, walks up to it while it's like flopping around, and then just grabs its head and rips its head off in like one fluid motion with his bare hand. It was crazy. I was like, this guy's gonna fucking win for sure. No hesitation. No, like I've seen other contestants in the past, they'll like do a little like prayer or something, and then they'll dispatch a small bird with like a rock or something off camera. This guy, like right up to the camera, doesn't say shit, just grabs his head, rips it off.
Wow. Ozzy Osbourne style.
He was a Hawaiian guy, super fat. It's hilarious.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah. Super fat Hawaiian guy with, I mean, white Hawaiian, white as hell, with dreadlocks, ripping a bird's head off.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, hey, there you go. You can live off the land in northern Saskatchewan. That's amazing. The
bounties seems like a very nature. Plentiful place in comparison to where they have done the other seasons.
Yeah. Well, it's a different kind of show. If you actually have access to resources, it's a very different challenge than the earlier shows were basically who could starve the longest.
Yeah. Most people were like, there are some seasons where I feel like everyone was just eating kelp the entire time. And then they would catch some sketchy fish and get poisoning and then
have to call it in. Yeah. Red tide or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Still a great show though. Like really
fantastic.
Really does. You see people get pushed to their absolute breaking point. And you know what? A few seasons, people do get established with like a ton of food and a very good shelter. And they do like, they build a boat, they build entertainment for themselves. Some people make like a whole set chess set and play against themselves. And like, they get to the point where they're totally stable. And then that's when they start losing their mind because they no longer have to focus on all the other stuff. And all they can focus on is how alone they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Alone. That's the show. They should do, they could do the opposite of that where you're not alone. And that's most reality shows. Basically, how long can you survive being in this house with these other people?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have the opposite of alone. So
there was that one season of Alone where they did partners. Like there was two people per team.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it came, a lot of them ended up getting in like serious arguments. And that's what led to their downfall.
Yep. Yep. Very fun. Well, big news for me. I am considering jumping back into a philosophy PhD program.
Whoa. Finally, some credibility, huh? In our goddamn... I'm just kidding. Because you already have your... What do you have? Your master's?
I have a master's, yeah. Master's and a bachelor's.
And then PhD is the next level, obviously.
Yeah.
Yes. So... with what goal in mind? Obviously, just to give our podcast more validation, right? So we can get some emails.
Exactly. Just for the algorithm. Strictly for the algorithm.
Just to be able to change that one set of letters in the description of the podcast.
Yeah. No, I'm doing it because I don't think I can be happy unless I'm working in philosophy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You've realized that?
Yeah, it took long enough, but I think
that's what a lot of life is figuring out what you have to try a bunch of things you're not happy at to narrow it down.
Yes. Yeah. And every time when I had an opportunity to go into a PhD, I always had some other reason not to do it or some qualm or some relationship or something that got in the way. And
now you're untethered, free.
Now I'm untethered and free, and I'm realizing there's pretty much only one thing I think I can actually do. And I got to do that.
Do and be happy long term.
Yeah. But it's interesting because most people go straight in to PhDs from their MA or from their bachelor's. So I'm coming at it unconventionally. So I think what I need to do is I emailed some people at UBC Vancouver to try and audit their courses.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I work with them and then they can help me with reference letters to programs.
So would this require another move in your near future?
Yeah, depending on which program I get into, I'd almost certainly have to move. That's the thing about being in a philosophy PhD program is you probably are going to have to move somewhere. To
Whereabouts would you think is more likely for you to have to move to?
Well, in Canada, just based on the number of colleges and universities, statistically, I'd probably wind up back in Ontario.
Going back to the center.
I don't mind. I like Ontario. I don't mind Ontario at all. But yeah, that's one of the hard parts about doing it is you do have to be ready to move anywhere in the country.
Now, and then hypothetically, move
again after
that.
After you do the program, you have to move again to do your postdoctorate and
hypothetically, we become an American state. Then would that open up your options as far as where to go?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can still, I could still apply to American programs. You can still apply as a Canadian to U.S. graduate programs. You have to pay more money, I think. But yeah. But anyway, yeah. Even if we were the 51st state, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how that would affect us. Because right now, right? If you're a Canadian right now,
yeah.
Bachelor of Arts at UBC is like $6,000 a term if you're a Bachelor of Arts.
Mm-hmm.
Canadian. If you're a foreign student, it's almost $50,000 a year.
What?
Yeah.
So why do we have so many foreign students coming over here?
So that we can pay dirt cheap to go to UBC. That's why.
Is that really why?
That's been their business model since they started. They've had a huge proportion of foreign students precisely to bankroll the program.
Wow.
People, foreign countries, I mean, a Canadian degree from UBC, that is like worth its weight in gold.
Interesting. Well, just when we thought we had you back permanently, you've got plans to leave again.
I never said permanently. I made a point to never say permanently.
It was insinuated, all right?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Who knows? It won't be for at least a year because I have to audit programs, get back into the world, get some network connections. Because you can't just apply to a PhD program. You have to have letters of reference from academics.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then what would be the end goal?
Become professor? Some sort of professor and teach. Yeah, maybe research, but probably teach.
Do you think once you get your PhD, you'll be able to grow a beard?
I could grow a beard, but it doesn't look very good on me, I don't think.
Well, I mean, I can grow what is technically a beard, but it looks atrocious. I'm talking a respectable beard.
I think I look better with like a little bit of stubble or clean shaven. I don't know. But I did buy a bunch of like very academic attire. So I'm going to be ready to look.
The jacket with the elbow pads, the elbow patches, I mean, on it.
I did get a jacket. I don't know if it has elbow pads, though.
You got to get the elbow patches. That means that'll show them that you're pondering at your desk quite a lot.
Yeah, if they're nice and worn, that's the trademark.
Yeah, you can't be coming in there with an unworn, like a brand new jacket with fresh patches.
You got to have chalk on your sleeves.
It's like showing up to a construction site with brand new steel toe boots, brand new Carhartt, everything.
Like those Ben are the people Stiller
where you're
Zoolander.
Just like, oh, God.
It's like Ben Stiller in Zoolander when he becomes a coal miner.
Exactly.
Shows up, he's got all brand new gear.
Yeah. I just remember when I worked up in the oil patch back in the day, obviously I was that guy at first, but you know, you see him coming a mile away once you've been in it for a bit and all your hard hat and your covies and your boots are all completely soaked in oil.
Oh man, the patch. The patch.
Patch.
More patches are coming. I think they want to expand the mining in BC, I've heard. They want to do uranium mining.
Well,
we have some of the most uranium in the world in British Columbia.
Interesting. I've been doing radon testing in my house.
Yeah.
Which is from uranium in the ground that leaks up into houses.
We got to get this stuff out of the ground. It's dangerous. We got to mine it and get it out of here. It's dangerous. I think we have to mine it.
You think so?
I think it's
luckily my house has been reading within safe levels, although it is reading. There is a reading on there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
it's insane that there's like uranium insufficient quantities breaking down and releasing radon under your house that it can be read. That's
lots
crazy.
In the Okanagan. Some places have to have radon mitigation systems installed.
That's fascinating.
Which is actually scary. I'm reading a book right now. Actually, it's a sci-fi series I'm starting. That's apparently amazing, but I'm yet to be. No, it's called the series is called the Sun Eater series.
Oh.
And I think there's 6 books out or 7 books.
Chronos.
Empire of Silence is the first book. Anyways, in that story is their currency is uranium based.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Uranium based. What does that mean?
That's a good question. I got to say that it, some of the stuff in the book is very technical sounding, but I'd have to pull it up and look. But I just remember
it sounds smart, but I don't know.
I just know that they said that they're basically their currency is somehow tied into like uranium, as in like, that's what you know how we used to have the gold standard. I think it's kind of like it's the uranium standard.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Like back in the day, coins, like Roman coins. Mm-hmm. They were like 90% gold,
yeah,
90% silver. Like they were just solid gold and solid silver, basically super high quality.
I was talking today about when I went into the Tower of London and you go, you can see the crown jewels. Like,
oh, I've seen them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen
them. Yeah. It's like legitimately treasure, like old school treasure.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like treasure. Movie. It looks like a prop you'd see on like a pirate.
You see
movie.
It and you want to steal them when you see them. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, okay, how do I heist this?
Like, there is something tantalizing about like really expensive jewelry where it's like when you see it in real life, you're like, yeah, I definitely want that.
I understand birds and crows. They try to take sparkly stuff for their nests. Yeah.
Yeah. If only you could send a crow into like. Into the mall, just go rampage through the jewelry stores in the mall, get like 20 crows.
That's so smart, actually. That's the next thief,
the next
master thief, the master of crows.
Well, I bet you if you went to like if you could somehow train a like subaquatic, like a bird that can dive into water and then go take it to like some really popular beaches on the planet. I bet you lots of people lose so much jewelry in the shallow waters of Malibu Beach.
Okay. So you train a bird to like fly over the beach.
Yeah. Right?
Fly around the beach and look for shiny shit and swoop down and pluck it off of people and bring it back to you.
Well, not pluck it off of people.
Oh, okay.
Find the stuff that's fallen off of people within the shallow.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because the metal detector nerds, they got the sand covered. That's going to be hard to compete. But no one's covering the shallow water. And you know the birds that can dive right into the water and grab their prey? Basically, I want my birds to be diving in and get me engagement rings and earrings and necklaces that have fallen off in the waves. Right? Because you think of this. You got a bunch of people, they're tourists, they're maybe not familiar with like the power of the ocean necessarily, but they're rich. So they go into the ocean with all their bling, they get hit with a couple of big waves, couple earrings get knocked loose, an engagement ring slips off. It's just sitting there for the taking. Or you get like a platypus or something that's like highly intelligent to go and like scoop it up into its little pouch.
Okay, I don't know if are platypus highly intelligent? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think they are. I think it's strange that you were on board with the birds diving in to get it. And now, as soon as I bring in a platypus, you're thinking this is unrealistic.
Well, I don't know if they are ocean going creatures, the platypus. I think they're freshwater.
Well, I'm not a monster. I'm going to give them a little, I'm going to put them in a suit. No, you think they don't breathe water. So it doesn't really, I don't think it would matter that much.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a new drone thing that you could do with people are probably going to steal stuff with drones somehow.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't think they have any drones that can fly and then hit the water and also then become a submersible immediately.
Not that they are willing to disclose to us. That's for sure.
How far ahead do you think that
transmedium objects, man?
How far ahead do you think where on the planet, whether it's known or secret, like top secret, probably government technology, how far ahead of it do you think it is than what the general public is aware of?
That's a good question. I kind of think in the sense that like game changing technologies, my guess is that, they exist, but they exist not in like a ready for market commercial
sense.
So, I think like the F-35, like the most advanced fighter jet, the F-35, stealth fighter, has extremely advanced technology that can like coat the plane in like an electrostatic envelope and stuff like that. It has like ridiculous technology. that maybe it could have a commercial application, but who knows? So I don't know, like the helmets, like the F-35 helmet and stuff like that. Like, I honestly don't know how advanced the stuff is that would be like commercially interesting.
Like, they have China revealed their first sixth generation fighter that's more advanced than what anything that they that America has.
Yeah,
but again, we live in a time where it's really hard to figure out just by reading headlines what's actually true.
But China's real advantage, I think, is in cyber war and quantum computing.
Right,
that's where they're ahead of the game.
I think that's where the world is going. Like, you know, once you can control the, you know, the infrastructure, the computing infrastructure of another country, if you can hack into all those systems. Another headline I read earlier was China's already hacked into like a ton of main infrastructure.
They just did the biggest hack in history. They hacked into the U.S. telecoms system, and nobody knows what they got. They could listen to anything. They could listen to wiretaps, literally anything, and no one knows what they took. And there's no way to fix the system either, because it's ancient. And it's, in fact, precisely because it's so ancient that they were able to get into it so easily.
You know what they say, like, lots of, I think the propaganda we get fed is that China is like this kind of backwards country with where all of its citizens get treated like garbage. But I'm seeing some of these drone shows they're doing over there, and I'm like, what was that city? It was like a city that was completely lit up. And
Shanghai.
Yeah, I looked at that video and I was like, okay, they look like they're 50 years in the future just based on this one video.
Yeah, they're in terms of like any sort of coordinated activity, grand strategy, urban planning cities. Yeah, they are like in a different world. But the quantum, they're way ahead in quantum.
Really?
Quantum's nuts, because quantum computers, like, I didn't realize how insane they are. If you have like a normal computer, right? I watched like a little thing about this today. The way normal encryption works is one of the techniques is called prime number encryption.
Yeah.
Where you take two prime numbers, multiply them together, and then the resulting number is the code. The product of the multiplication, that is the code.
Okay.
So you could take a prime number, one, and prime some other prime number, multiply them together. That number is the code. The solution to the code are the original two prime numbers that you multiplied together.
Right.
The only way a normal computer can figure out those numbers is by trying every prime number one at a time until it gets the pair that work.
Uh-huh.
So if you multiply together 200 digit long prime numbers, right? Hundreds of digits long prime numbers, multiply them together. It would take a normal computer like a trillion years to break the encryption.
Right.
And that's all the encryption that was used all around the world is basically, it's not based on being unbreakable. It's based on, it takes too long to check for anyone to break it. But the reason that is because modern computers, the way they work is they use bits. The bit can be on or it can be off. So you can only, each bit can only check one thing at a time, basically.
Right.
A quantum computer, the bits are called qubits. And through the wacky laws of quantum mechanics, they are in a superposition, which means they can be in more, they can be on and off at the same time, sideways, left, right, up, down, whatever. So a quantum computer can solve multiple problems simultaneously. And so a quantum computer can literally solve a problem that it would take a normal computer to solve in a trillion years. A quantum computer can do it in an instant.
So anything right now that is protected by this type of encryption, the prime number encryption, is going to be able to be busted immediately by quantum computing.
Oh yeah. Like not even a problem. If you had a sufficiently powerful quantum computer, which hypothetically nobody does yet. If somebody did, they could have already looked at everything and no one would know.
Yeah. Well, and then you incorporate that into AI and now you're on a whole nother level.
Oh, yeah. AI with the ability to run on a quantum computer. That's very game changing.
Yeah. Do you think that is the key to AGI?
It seems like a lot of the industry thinks that that is like the next key is harnessing quantum computing. I don't know how much you give an AI control over quantum computing. But I mean, yeah, that's a big deal.
Big deal.
But it's not like we will be able to have a quantum computer because you'd only be able to access it remotely because the quantum computer itself is like tiny. It's the size of a normal computer chip. The entire computer is the size of a chip. But its cooling system has to keep it at absolute zero.
Oh.
Which is the coldest temperature in the known universe.
Yeah. I can't imagine carrying that around in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, like back in the day, they would have some phones that were like exploding. Imagine that problem with a quantum
supercomputer
phone, except for if that happens, your entire body freezes immediately. Oh shit. You drop your phone and their entire town gets sent into an ice age.
Oh my God. Yeah. Or you open up a dimensional rift.
Yeah. So yeah. What's the latest with the drone New Jersey thing? Is that over now? Like what the fuck? That was like, everybody was waiting on the edge of their seats. There was a bunch of talk about plasmoids and extra dimensional beings. And
no, it's
the news cycle is king, yeah, man. The news cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right now, it's all about, all I'm getting in my feet is the Greenland, Canada, Panama Canal bullshit, which hijacked the whole H-1B visa debacle.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, maybe that's what this is all about, is taking the heat off of that kind of impending internal strife in the Republican Party. But I don't know. Really, what's going to come clear is on January 20th, we'll see how much of or the new president is bark or bite.
Yeah, that's interesting. He said a very interesting thing, Trump, when he was talking about Canada. He referred to the US-Canada border as that imaginary line.
Yeah.
You get rid of that imaginary line.
Uh-huh.
What an interesting thing to say. That's the most globalist thing any president has ever said.
I know, it's crazy because it's like he wants to completely erase the border in the north and like completely fortify the border in the south.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Well, I think he says things and then he gets criticized for it and then that hurts his ego and so he has to stick with it and then he has to come up with rationale for it.
Yeah.
And then he's surrounded by yes men, so I don't think he has a ton of people telling him to not say shit or to drop certain ideas at this point.
Yeah, it's just so interesting to say that. Like, so what do you think? Because he said it, you know, it's an imaginary line.
Yeah.
Should we have, like, when he says it, I don't think he means like a philosophical point that the world should have no borders.
Right.
And we should all be one new order,
uh-huh.
New world order. I don't think that's what he means. I think he means like, if it's practically beneficial, if it's beneficial, if it's in the US interest to take this territory, then this line should not stand in the way.
Yeah. I mean, well, at the end of the day, if the US wants Canada, there's nothing we can really do to stop them. That is the reality. The situation. In fact, if the US wanted a lot of things, there's not a whole lot anyone can do to stop them besides the other superpowers. But like if they wanted Panama Canal, if they want Greenland, if they want Canada, that they're gonna, and they have no qualms, you know, about being ethical, they can take all three of those things with force if they wanted to. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah. And I heard someone made a good point that like a lot of this talk is just basically negotiating tactics. It's the so-called art of the deal where you go to these people and you say to them, look, I'm the United States. And if you don't, and I'm going to take your country, I'm just going to take it. And I can't, they are forced to offer concessions to try and save face.
Right.
And it's just classic negotiating. You start out way, way higher up than you actually want to finish, but you give yourself that room.
His aim is not to make Canada the 51st state, but his aim is probably something like he wants to pay less for our oil or something.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So he says like, look, tariffs. Oh, you thought I was just going to impose harsh tariffs? No. I'm going to take your country.
Right.
Then it's like, okay. We don't want you to take our country. We don't need this percentage on the deal, and you can have this back and blah, blah, blah. And like all that stuff.
Right.
That's basically what I think is going on. And you're also right too, that it makes, it's so performative that it like his party, his supporters just eat it up. Like, oh, Don Jr. went to Greenland. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Look at that.
I saw he paid homeless people to like wear MAGA hats and take photos with them.
He's literally the Penguin. He's the Penguin.
Yeah. It's really like, I don't know if you saw in the group chat, I posted that poll like in Castanet, our local news, where they polled and they asked the question was, do you think Donald Trump is serious about making Canada the 51st state? And it was basically it was basically a 50-50 split on whether people thought he was serious or not. Like half the people not even knowing whether he's being a troll or if this is it's some other ulterior motive. Like, it's got to be the most confusing. I mean, in so many ways he's unpredictable, and in other ways he's so predictable, and it's just hard to figure out what the hell he's actually.
Well, he did this in 2016. He said he wanted to buy Greenland.
Right.
It's the same exact playbook. This is what he does.
And then did anything come of that?
Not that I'm aware of. Well, he didn't get Greenland, obviously. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is not to get Greenland or to get Canada or something like that, I don't think. Because I don't think the U.S. benefits really from that. Because like right now, they have Canada and Mexico. To a less extent, Mexico. But Canada is basically a buffer zone between the U.S. and Russia.
Right.
And big trading partner. Weak Canadian dollar. Big playground for Americans to go to, and you don't have to worry about you don't have to worry about, you know, government expenditures to pay for Canadians' healthcare and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think they're better off without, you know, owning Canada and being responsible for it in some sense.
Wouldn't that really like add a shit ton of Democrats to the voting pile, to the voting pool there? Because I think most of Canada would probably vote Democrat, I would imagine. Who knows at this point, but.
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone who votes conservative would probably vote Republican, I would think. But again, the Democrats are not a really very left wing compared to the NDP or the Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a European liberal party, whatever.
So what's your opinion on the landscape of the next 10 years? Do you think we're going to see big earth shaking changes, AKA new borders being drawn, AI taking jobs? Is that, do you think that these things will come to pass? Or do you think that 10 years from now, we'll be relatively in a similar position with, you know, some minor changes? Like the debate today was how severe the impact of AI will be on jobs, and will we see a massive loss of jobs? We have Mark Zuckerberg saying it won't be an issue, but we have Elon saying it will take all of the jobs. So which billionaire do you simp to at this point?
Well, I mean, that's interesting. I don't know. It's hard to predict the world. And, I think a lot of it comes down to like, what is Trump actually going to do? Is he going to try to like let Russia have its way in Ukraine? I don't know. I think we're not going to see the big changes that you'd expect. I think it's going to be, unfortunately, another typical few years of just stupid shit.
Just headlines, just wanting to hog the headlines.
I think
I'm for one, from a comedian's point of view, for comedy's point, like from the stance of just my own life and how it'll affect me, mostly it's going to be having to hear the same jokes being made over and over again by hack comedians.
Yeah. No, I think if you see anything, I think you will see the Democratic Party in the United States being pushed further to the left.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
You don't think they're going to correct? They're going to take this as a moment of learning and maybe ease off on some of their more extreme policies?
I think the entrenched people are dying. I think the Pelosi's of the world, the Mitch McConnell's of the world, I think these people are literally just dying. They're aging out.
Yeah.
And I think the next generation seems to not be on board with a lot of the status quo, it seems like. Because it seems like on both sides of the aisle, Republican, Democrat, people are pissed about capitalism and how it's going. Consider this statistic, right? This is Professor Scott Galloway, who's a great source on this. But he made a great point, right? The difference in your health, your successful outcomes, your quality of life, your life expectancy, if you're earning 30K and then you go up to 60K, the difference is enormous, right? If you earn 30K a year versus 60K a year.
Yeah.
The difference in your quality of life is enormous with that 30K.
Yeah.
The difference between earning $10 million a year and $10,030,000 a year is, it doesn't exist. There is no difference.
Mm-hmm.
So he makes a great point that we have, it doesn't get you any happiness, that 20K or even another 10 million after your first 10 million. Does another 10 million, does 20 million make you happier than 10 million? Right? Like it's.
Yeah. I think at a certain point it becomes.
People don't need that.
I also think that amount of money. People overestimate the amount of sustainable happiness that luxury actually provides.
Yeah.
I think novelty is a quickly dwindling feeling. And at the end of the day, having a fancy, nice car, a fancy, nice house, you get used to stuff so quickly.
Yeah.
And things lose its sheen so quickly. I mean, the main thing that would, I think, equate that money is tied into happiness would be freedom, right? You can do what you want when you want.
That's the most important part of it.
Yeah.
It buys you more freedom. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like, you don't need.
If you're making $9 million a year, how much more freedom do you get if you're making $11 million a year?
Exactly. Right? Like, I think at a certain point, it's a sickness, the billionaire class.
Yeah.
To be that rich and still like this, like but recently even, with Zuckerberg even, yeah. capitulating or switching his stance on whatever, I guess he changed like themes you can have on your messenger. Is that what it was?
Oh, he's just trying to like stick his face as far up Trump's ass as it can possibly go.
I know, but
he has a huge antitrust lawsuit against Facebook from the former Trump administration that is about to kick off.
There you go.
Yeah.
But also like, why do I care what someone else has as a theme in their messenger? Like, why would I give a shit if someone who's gay has a rainbow color scheme in his messenger? As long as it's not like he forces my messenger to have it.
My computer's gone gay.
Computer's turned gay. There's
gay
too many.
Virus.
Is that what, cause I think from what I read, that's what it was. He like took away the gay themes you can have in your messenger.
Fact checking. He took away. He took away. They used to have tampons in the men's washrooms at Facebook headquarters, right? Very,
mm-hmm.
very progressive policy, and he took those out. Those are gone. Imagine working there, and it's like, oh, actually, we don't give a shit about this stuff anymore.
Like I said, like it's okay to have your own like beliefs on that stuff, but the timing of it is just makes me seem like such a sniveling bitch. Like you clearly are just doing.
Yeah.
If fucking Kamala wins the next election and it swings back the other way, guess what's coming back to the bathrooms. rainbow colored tampons.
He'll shave. He'll get a haircut again.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's such a little chameleon. He really does have like lizard like.
Dude, qualities. He put Dana White on the board, on the Meta board of directors.
Why?
Luke Thomas explained this on his podcast. Dana White, who's Dana White's best friend?
Donald Trump.
Donald fucking Trump.
And then Joe Rogan.
Who has an antitrust lawsuit against Facebook coming up? Donald Trump's administration. Now Dana White is on the board of Meta. Will Donald feel
go against his friend?
I don't want to go against Dana.
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 He's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Dana White.
He's got a great right hook. He's got a great slap.
Yep.
I like the way he took his wife out.
Hell of a woman. Hell of a woman. Tough lady.
Tough lady.
They're fighting. What are you going to do?
Yeah. And then now it's like the Joe Rogan podcast has basically become let's just get a bunch of rich people spewing their ideas on it. I feel like yeah. I
loved him with Mel Gibson.
I saw some of those. The Shroud of Turin. And then he had a Christian apologist on recently. Like, what is going on over there?
Okay, well, here's the thing, right? And this is where I see a convergence happening, right? All the Christianity, the one good thing about Christianity, which has been abused, is that it does teach poverty and charity. But of course, that's abused with the wealth gospel and stuff.
Yeah.
But so like back to this thing about the 30-60K and the 10 million to 15 million or whatever. This guy's point was that Professor Scott Galloway, his point was that we should reintroduce the very harsh tax schemes that used to exist. And this isn't true for Canada, but this would be true for the States. And in a way, it should be true for Canada too, where you reintroduce very harsh tax schemes that really, really hit hard when you go over, say, $10 million a year. Right? Bernie Sanders wanted a tax. Oh, shit. Are you still here?
Yeah.
Okay. So Bernie Sanders wanted like to tax anything over like a billionaire tax of 100%.
Yeah.
Anything over 999 million is gone. And he just said people can get by on 999 million. They'll be okay.
And how?
But it should be also true down at the 10 million level, where if you are making $10 million a year, you should be taxed 40, 50% of your income. And if you're making less, you should have a much smaller tax rate, because the little people are fully, he said, the system, Scott Galloway said, he said, the system is full oligarch. The richer you are, fundamentally, the less taxes you're having to pay.
Right.
And the little people are bearing the real burden, where that 20K difference between like 30 and 50K is so huge to their lives. And yet it's being taxed.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about the most, like how many billionaires are in the administration now? Like, it feels like
the whole cabinet.
They've taken over the government. It's like, weren't you powerful enough? Were you not influential enough? You have to buy the government now.
Yeah.
And it feels like there is an oligarchy appearing before our eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I guess I would say if anything crazy does happen, I think it will be more Luigi Mangione style.
Vigilante.
Yeah. The income inequality is out of control. Like you hear a lot of liberal commentators leading up to the election were like, the economy is actually really good. All the indicators are great. The stock market. I mean, literally the S&P, the stock market had one of its best years ever.
Yeah.
Under Biden, best years ever. And so they're like, oh, the economy's great. And ordinary people are like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. I was just reading something on somewhere, some godforsaken social media platform, where it's like people that are young, that are our age, that are living, in like, they don't have multiple vehicles. They don't have a home. They don't own their own home. They're paying rent, and they don't realize that like the middle class is actually, middle class used to mean owning a home, multiple vehicles, paying one person bringing in the income can support a whole family. That was the middle class. And now everybody is just so accustomed to being lower class that they don't even realize what used to be. Mm-hmm. No one under 30 really has experienced that type of life. Like, we have, like, even our best, like, even the people in my life that have to make the most money that are similar to my age, they don't, you know, they don't usually have easily owning homes or vehicles like that.
No. And like the trap, like the great trap of it is that if you have an extremely high paying job, mm-hmm. you will have to live in a certain area close to your high paying job. And that area where you live and that area where you work will be tailored to people of your income. Mm-hmm. And everything thus is more expensive.
Yeah.
And so it's like, even for the people who aren't, even, you know, people who are making 200K a year, 300K a year, even they are like pinched because where they live, everything is so expensive. It's just insane.
Yeah. So maybe there's some sort of reckoning coming as far as the income disparity. I just don't see it happening though. I feel like it's just going to get worse. I don't know. Eventually there's got to be some sort of breaking point, right?
Oh yeah. Like communist revolution.
Well, I don't know. Like when
it's, I think
when,
it will happen. I think because I think
people, we're really legitimately at the point where people under 30, like young people are just ruling out having families entirely for financial reasons. It's yeah. Like, and I get it. It's like, why would someone who's 30 years old with three roommates in a tiny apartment, how could they possibly think of starting a family?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's, and another thing that's interesting is it seems to me like, most of the disagreements between people about politics are not about economy or billionaires or taxing the rich. It seems like almost everybody, regardless of whether you identify as a conservative or a liberal or a Democrat or Republican, people are anti-billionaire, pro-taxing the wealthy. Both sides of the aisle, it seems like. They might disagree about lots of other things, but
the social issues, yeah.
The social issues, there's disagreement on the surface. I think most social issues, the disagreement is surface level.
Right.
And people get really worked up about it because the terms they use are too broad and no one really, people are just venting. So I don't think there really is that.
Feels like the rich, the upper, the elites know exactly how to stoke these social issues to get the lower class people arguing about it and thus not having to address the wealth disparity issues and economy issues.
Well, I hate to say this, but that is 100% true. That's been the practice for over 100 years, going back to Edmund Bernays and the system of public relations. Where
we're getting played.
Yeah, basically.
And guess what the biggest tool to stoke these differences in social issues is? Social media. That's why Mark Zuckerberg, I know someone else would have invented social media eventually, but wow, I struggle to see the benefits of social media at this point, as far as net positives versus net negatives.
But we can communicate more now. So that's good. That's what he said. He helps people communicate. And it's true. WhatsApp is great.
WhatsApp, yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, it reads all your messages. I randomly got $36 from a class action lawsuit that I didn't even know I was in from Facebook. Like, what the fuck else should I be getting reimbursed for? Right? Like, I didn't even know I was in this. Basically, they used one of my stories to profit somehow.
Oh, like so the story you posted to Facebook?
Yeah. So, or Instagram or whatever. So I got a payout. We should be, everybody in the country should be getting that every month from Facebook.
Yeah, now we're talking.
Now we're fucking talking.
What do you think about this theory? This is a conspiracy theory that since the United Health CEO got shot, Elon Musk has been carrying around one of his kids nonstop.
Yeah, I agree. Human shield, 100%. Human shield. In his mind, he's probably like, the people, they need to see that I'm just a father, like, what of them? But really, he knows why he's doing it.
Yeah, I mean, anyone can get God if enough people are mad at you, right? So Trump almost got shot, and
if only
he's only gotten people a certain amount of pissed off. Like, a lot of people hate Trump, but they're not willing to kill him.
See, the problem is, if Trump, see, here's a conspiracy theory I just thought of. So, J.D. Vance, right?
Yeah,
he's the vice president. He is basically just.
I haven't seen anything about him since.
He's just a puppet. He's a puppet. Elon Musk is the real vice president.
Yes,
or the real president, even. But
yeah,
but J.D. Vance is a puppet, and he is there in case he's there to be groomed for. There's a theory that he is there to be groomed to be the next president.
Right.
Him to run with Don Jr. as vice president, something like that.
Mandatory eyeliner. Yeah. Mandatory.
Yeah.
Everybody has to do it.
We're on the Vance team now.
Yeah.
J.D. Vance refrigeration from the office. Anyway,
there you go.
If Trump were to die, Vance would become president. And he is much more controllable, much more amenable to people like Elon Musk. I kind of think that assassination attempt, I wouldn't be surprised if it was done by the Republicans to get rid of Trump so that Vance could immediately win the election with Trump as a martyr.
Well, that's what I thought too, is like, now, like, all it would take for J.D. Vance to become the most powerful person on the planet is for Trump to keel over and die. And if it can be blamed on the Democrats, even better.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, and there, I don't know. Sometimes I think that, great, crazy conspiracy theory, but sometimes I wonder, do these crazy people, does some secret intelligence organization like radicalize them? Or do they just radicalize themselves?
I mean, I think they find people that are already, if we're going to go with the theory that this was a hit placed on Trump by using someone who's been radicalized.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
I think a lot of people, there's enough forums out there.
Two people tried to kill him.
I think there's been more than that, probably.
Well, there are two, like, very publicly, like,
yeah.
One was at his golf course. The guy was hiding in the bushes with, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the other guy actually got, that one was suspicious. Just like, how do you not see that guy? How Climb do you not stop that from happening? Like, you would
okay. The non-conspiracy explanation was that it was because the Secret Service director was incompetent and wouldn't let people go on roofs that had a certain pitch. Because it was unsafe.
Okay. I mean, that seems ridiculous when your entire job should be doing whatever it takes.
Yeah. That's just the stupid thing. But the guy who shot him was a Republican, which is weird.
Well, he donated to the Republican Party one time.
Oh, okay.
But he so I don't know if that's really...
Just a weirdo.
Yeah. I mean, he could have at one point been sympathetic to the Republicans. I don't know if he was actually like...
Okay.
A vote like a guy who, I mean, he was too young. He might have only voted once. Has he was even old enough to have voted in a single election yet?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know.
But that doesn't explain what happened to the drones in New Jersey. Where are they? Are they still there?
Happening.
People
still
have
happening.
Just start. People have moved on.
The news cycle has just moved on. But yeah, it's still happening. The FAA actually implemented tons of restricted no drone flying zones in New Jersey.
They adhere to those restrictions? Okay, so you know what else? One of my favorite things.
Okay, I'll just say this.
Okay, go.
With this whole drone thing, vast majority of these that we're all seeing are nothing, but there are some that are anomalous, and this gets ignored too much. But even the government has admitted that they see metallic orbs around the world, apparently traveling with unknown propulsion at Mach 2 against the wind.
So, do you remember me telling you about that guy, Bashar, who, well, the alien's called Bashar, but the guy who channels the alien known as Bashar, and he speaks in front of people, and people ask the alien questions.
Right.
He answers them. And it's very, like, he's actually quite convincing. I mean, the funniest thing to me is this alien is such a fucking, like, arrogant asshole sometimes. Like, he really makes people feel stupid. I'm like, oh, these are the aliens. I don't even want to like hang out with him. He just seems like such a douche for an alien.
Oh, like
go so watch fun. Some of his videos. But there is a clip of him discussing how first contact is going to happen. And this was happening. This is, he was recorded saying this a couple of years ago. So before this, all this phenomena with the drones in New Jersey, but he was pretending to be, he's like, as first contact, what's going to happen is we're going to appear in various regions on the planet, in the sky, and we're not going to do anything threatening. And we're just going to let you guys be accustomed to that until it becomes to the point where no one is concerned that there are UAPs flying around. Basically, he was just very, very slowly acclimatizing the population to the idea of these foreign objects appearing in the sky. And then after a few years, everybody that's going to be like, it's basically already happened now. Everybody's just kind of accepted that there's stuff like that happening. Then they're going to show a little bit more of what they can do. And then that's going to be that's going to be a huge news story. People are going to be freaking out about that. But eventually people will get accustomed to that. And that will be how they slowly, very slowly over time, initiate first contact, is by very, very slowly acclimatizing humanity to the presence of these extraterrestrials.
Okay. That's interesting.
It's a fact. The alien said that.
That is kind of sort of like the plot of Arthur C. Clarke's novel Childhood's End.
Oh. Where
the overlord aliens do sort of show up and park over the major cities for like a week before they say, oh, we're taking over.
A week isn't very long.
Yeah, a week isn't very long.
But I mean, encourage anyone listening to go look up videos of Bashar the alien and tell me that this alien character isn't kind of a douchebag, like kind of an annoying guy.
Probably condescending. I mean,
very condescending. That's the perfect word.
Well, we are a bunch of stupid monkeys, so.
I know, but like, does he have to come off that way? I mean.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I kind of don't want to talk to these aliens if they're going to be like this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So as for the drone situation, hasn't stopped. Still happening. Can't shoot them down. And they've straight up, you can go and watch this. This was a briefing. This was actually said by the Arrow director, who since left and resigned and mocks the topic. But he straight up said, like, we've observed these metallic orbs around the world traveling it up to Mach 2 against the wind, no apparent propulsion. They don't know what they are. But the thing is, right, so if this guy is right about disclosure, what you could say about Bashar is that what's happened first is that these objects have made themselves known to the militaries of the world. So why would they only be, because they don't show up to ordinary people,
right?
Even within the military, 90% of sightings, they can explain them. It's the handful that really, they don't know what is going on. They can't explain them conventionally. So whatever these things are, if they are choosing to reveal themselves, they only seem to basically reveal themselves to the military. And you wonder, is that a Bashar technique? From what he's saying, are they acclimating the military to their presence so that when they maybe park an orb over the Macy's Day Parade, the military doesn't try to shoot it down with a cruise missile?
Well, Bashar does say that they're going to be very non-threatening. Their presence will appear non-threatening. That's what he said. And this was apparently but we've also gotten to the point where this clip I heard of Bashar could have been generated last week with AI.
Yes, that's true. But listen, this is kind of wild, right? But what is the sort of contradictory thing that you always hear about the drones? We don't know who they are. We don't know what they're doing, where they're from, blah, blah, blah.
But we know they're not a threat.
They're not a threat.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of like Bashar. That sounds kind of like what he's saying. Like, yes, they've acclimated. The military has been acclimated that these things are here, but they're not a threat.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the one explanation I heard for those drones was more likely than other ones. And that's that some mistake has been made at a nuclear site or something. Or I heard that this was the conspiracy I heard, is that nuclear what is it? Something you need for nuclear bombs has been stolen from a nuclear facility, and they're using drones to try and recover it or find it. They think it's nearby or something, and that's why they don't want to tell us what they are.
There actually was a small piece of germanium for a medical device that was lost and found. So there is some truth to that, but that's not the sightings that get attention, not the fake sightings, not the stuff that actually matters, happens predictably at military facilities around the world for months at a time and can't be stopped.
Well, lucky
and
for
the mainstream media doesn't say a peep about it. They don't say a peep about it, but it's happening.
Well, you can only run a story for so long before it stops getting you clicks.
Well, they don't follow up. They don't chase it as hard as they should.
There's no money in following up. There's no money in fact checking. There's only money in clicks.
There's money in not pissing off your government sources who feed you cherry picked stories.
Well, luckily for our listeners, we have an email so they can chime in now. So you guys can send us an email. What do you think is going to happen? Is the next 10 years going to be a big nothing burger? Is AI going to not really impact the job market? Are we going into an oligarchy? Are we going to see some sort of class war? Is there going to be our borders going to be redrawn in the next 10 years? Is there going to be a massive global war? Are we going to see aliens? You can chime in by emailing us at tpspod420@gmail.com. TPSPOD420.
All caps.
Not all caps. Right. Lowercase.
Not all. Lowercase.
Everything lowercase. That's our podcast. I got to get my head straight before this show. Talk to you. I guess you're on the show, so I'll see you in a bit.
All right. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, yeah. I pause it now. Right.
Philosopher's Stone.